Welcome to another episode of Connected Tech Talks, the podcast from ITS. I'm here with my usual co-host, Catherine McNamara. Hi, Catherine.
Hi.
And I'm also excellent to be joined today by ITS's chairman, Kevin Gaskell, who does some work with ITS, some with some other businesses, and has got a big track record in business. So it'll be good to get his thoughts on things, won't it?
It certainly will. It certainly will.
Welcome, Kevin.
Oh, thanks, Dave. It's nice to be here. Mm-hmm. Nice to be interviewed in one of my own companies.
Absolutely. Quite interesting.
So, obviously, ITS is what's kind of brought us all together today. But, Kevin, you've had a really interesting kind of career history. Could you give us a little bit of a potted view?
So, I'm a civil engineer by training. Did my first degree in civil engineering. Worked as a civil engineer for 3 or 4 years. Built some big structures, one of which is the M54 motorway, which I drove up yesterday.
You built that all on your own?
Yeah, or? All on my own. Me and 5,000 guys. And then I did an MBA. My university invited me back, responsibly to do an MBA. Then I became an accountant. I worked as an accountant for 4 years. Then I got a job in the motor industry. 4 years later, I ended up at the age of 32 as the chief executive of Porsche in the UK. Business was in terrible trouble. I led a big turnaround there. We went from last in the market to first in the market. Then BMW knocked on the door. I went around BMW in this country for 4 or 5 years. And that, again, was similar to Porsche, about thinking differently. Where can we take this business? What can we do with it? And the business had been quite successful, and everyone thought it was doing really well. I thought, no, we can do a lot better than this. The business was growing at 4% per annum. I said, no, we can do different. Let's think. And I invited a team to come. Let's think. Let's do different things. And over the next 4 years, we grew the business by 80%, and we grew operating profit by 500%.
Wow.
And everyone said, wow, that's a miracle. I said, it's not a miracle. We just did the basic things really well.
Hmm.
I was chief executive of BMW. 5 years. Then I decided I wanted my own business. So I stepped out at the age of 40 and I started a company which was about supplying cars through the internet. The internet was a big thing then. Nobody really understood it. Car dealers definitely didn't understand it. And I thought, no, we can change the industry. We can actually change the industry. And so we started a business to resell cars online, found it didn't work because the consumer at that point wasn't prepared to buy a car.
Ready.
They'd only seen online. And so we changed it around and we turned it into, we used the platform as a back office for the fleet sector. And they were prepared to source cars because they knew what they were buying.
Yeah.
They weren't fussy about seeing a car kicking the tires. Mm. And we became the go-to system for the fleet sector in the UK. That was a big success. I sold that business. Then I built a data business. And long story short, I've built 16 companies now in the last 20 years.
Wow.
And it's been a lot of fun.
Pretty good going.
It is. A lot of hard work. And here we are building ITS, where it's a lot of fun.
You've said something there which you said was the what happened when you went into Porsche, when you went into BMW. Mm-hmm. And I think that's probably something that's carried through the 16 businesses that you've built. That willingness to see things probably from a different viewpoint, mm-hmm. how to change, almost how to probably see around corners. How have you kind of adopted that? How do you lead teams to think in that mindset and be able to essentially take on that change journey?
It's about inviting people on a journey. And I say to people, we need to decide what success looks like when we'll get there. And that's not a number. You know, I say to people, what is success? These days, I consult for a lot of companies as well. And I say to them, what is your plan? And they say, oh, we want to hit 10 million in profit. And I say, no, forget that. That's the score. That's not the game.
Mm.
What do you look like when you're successful? And a lot of people have difficulty in actually explaining what they mean. And I said, oh, let's talk about the business. What would it be? What could it be? And so for me, it's about breaking away from the numbers. The numbers follow the plan.
Mm.
It's about understanding where we're going to be. ITS was a classic. When I came here, it was 8 years ago, there were 12 people, I think. And, you know, our revenues were kind of 30,000 quid a month. And we were going nowhere. And we were trying to do what everyone else did. We were doing family, home broadband, stuffy. We weren't quite sure. And we said, well, actually, let's be different. Now, I'm not pretending I'm responsible for that, because certainly Darren came in, and Darren was the one who drove that. But it's about challenging yourself to think different. Don't just follow the crowd. If you follow the crowd, you'll be a me too.
Yeah.
Don't follow the crowd. They all go left, you go right. And understand what could be there. And I say, it's not about chasing market share. Don't chase market share. That's hard work. Chase opportunity share. Mm. Look where the opportunities are. And that's where we'll go and explore. And you know what? We might discount most of them because they're not achievable or they're not commercial. But opportunity share is where I look. And that's what I enjoy doing. Let's just think different.
How did you find the BMW bit? Really interesting, because they're, like you say, successful business at that point. They're doing well, selling things, people are buying their cars, they've got a brand that's recognised, it's a kind of relative luxury brand, I imagine, at that time as well. Growing relatively modestly. But all of those people in that business that you had to take on that journey probably thought, oh, we're doing really well.
They did.
How did you change? How did you get them on that journey? What did you do?
I described it at the time, I called it a fur-lined rut.
Hmm.
They were in a groove, and it was all terribly comfortable, and there was no reason to change it. And the people who recruited me, BMW, when they wanted a new chief air, they came to Porsche. They walked in, the supervisory board member walked into Porsche, said hello to reception, walked past, came up to my office, knocked on the door, walked in and sat down. And he said, I want you to run BMW GB. And we started talking. And I said, you know, you're very successful. He said, we could be more successful. So when I went there and I listened to the team and I spoke to the dealers and I spoke to the customers, it was clear we weren't doing the things that we could do. And we weren't listening to our customers. So give me, for instance, our biggest client was BT. Very appropriate, here we are at ITS. Our biggest client was BT. And they bought 1,500 cars every year for their sales. Yeah. Right? And I said to the team at BMW, how much of our business is corporate sales? And he said, we don't do corporate sales. Corporate sales are what Ford do and what Vauxhall do. And I said, okay, let me ask you a different question. How many of our cars are sold through corporates? And I said, over 65%. I said, so we do corporate sales. Let's not kid ourselves. I said, but why don't we do it differently? And they said, what do you mean? And when I spoke to BT, I went to meet the guys at BT, and one of their challenges was depreciation because they had a budget. They had a monthly operating budget for the cars, right? Not purchase price, monthly operating budget. And the way they wanted to get around that was they specified, and we helped them to specify really basic cars. So it was a BMW 318, and you could have it white, red, black, or blue, plain color, no metallic, steel wheels, plastic seats, basic car. Now, the reps loved the fact they were driving around with a BMW badge.
Yeah.
But the car was totally compromised. Mm. And the trouble was, when that car came back,
couldn't shift it.
Couldn't sell it on the used car market. It's worth nothing. And so I said to our team, why don't we think of it the other way around? We're looking at monthly operating costs. So put a sunroof in, put leather seats in, put alloy wheels in, make it a nice color. Car is worth 70% of its original value on the used car. The monthly operating cost goes down. And we hadn't thought of it like that. So it was that kind of, let's just look at it from the customer's perspective. And saying to everybody in the business, you've got the opportunity to change this. You can change it. I give you the authority. I give you the accountability, but go make it happen. And that's what happened. And listen, there's a process. I run a process of how we build a strategy and how we roll it out. But what that did was encourage people to go and do things different. And we got away from the competitors.
Yeah.
We left Audi and Jaguar behind and just off we went.
That's an example of where you've gone in and you've kind of affected that change because you've seen an opportunity. What about where you've been working in a market or a sector and actually something has happened that has meant you've had to change, had to pivot? Have you got any examples
Could
you share some of that with us?
So I was running a marketing company. It was marketing data. It was a technology business, but it was marketing data. And we found that the technology was coming into the market. This is years ago, before AI. But the market was getting more sophisticated. The expectation of the client was getting more sophisticated. And so we stopped what we were doing and said, let's just think about what this could be. And we really changed the product strategy and we changed the approach to the client. And we effectively kept on new products. They're the same products, but the way we presented them and the way we fed them into what the user needed meant the user felt they were getting a much better service. And that business became a success. We sold it to MailChimp. And as far as I'm aware, it's still part of MailChimp today. Wow. And it was great. But it really is. It's about listening to the client.
Yeah.
I mean, Dave, you're a salesman. You know. The first job is, what is the client's pain point?
Yeah.
What is it they want solving? Because if you don't fix that, you might convince them to buy something because the price is right. But you won't convince them to build a relationship.
Yeah.
You need to fix the client's pain point. And that's what we do in our businesses.
If you think about the businesses that you're kind of involved with now, Kevin, how are emerging technologies impacting how they grow and think and behave?
You know, the buzzword of the moment now is AI.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm involved in 4 technology businesses, and we are looking how best to use AI capability to accelerate our product development, to make the product more appropriate for the client. And listen, a bit of it is marketing spin. You know, we use the words AI, and then people think they're getting something that's a bit special. I use AI every day. I use ChatGPT or Perplexity every day. And it's great. It saves me hours in a week. And I'm very familiar with it, very comfortable with it. And I had this debate with my son the other week. He's writing an MSc thesis at the moment. I said, well, use AI. He said, no, it's cheating. I said, no, it's not cheating, Matt. You need to ask it the right questions to get the answers. I mean, you know the question. It is a facilitator. I said, you're typing this on a computer. Is that cheating? Why don't you handwrite it? I said, well, it's a tool. It's just a tool. What we try to do I'm involved in 5 companies today. What we try to do in all of them is work out how we can best leverage that technology to enhance the customer experience. So if you approach it that way, you don't go off on an AI trip because it's AI. AI is just another computer program. That's what it is. Don't imagine it's got magical powers. It doesn't. It's just a set of algorithms. It's just a computer program. So use it to improve your product and service.
And what is it you look for in the businesses that you get involved with? Because clearly you probably must get invited to get involved, look at a few, make a decision on whether you do want to be involved. But what is it that you look for? What attracts you into companies as a rule? And if you were to take RTS as an example, what was it that attracted you into kind of working with them 8 years ago?
I'd say there's 2 things that attract me. One is the journey. What could this journey be?
Yeah.
And you know, we're sitting here in ITS, but I've got to say, all the businesses I've ever been involved in, this is the one with the biggest opportunity.
Okay.
This could be a multi-billion pound company in our lifetime. You know, this is not looking out over hundreds of years. We can build this to be a billion-dollar business. And considering when I came here, it was a £30,000 business. You know, that's quite a journey. I look for the journey. What could the journey? Can I imagine where this thing could go? And then the second thing is the people. Are there people here who I can work with? Or do I know people sometimes who would come and join me on this journey who would help to shape this business and take it somewhere exciting? It's got to be fun. Listen, I love excitement. You know, I'm an adrenaline junkie. Outside work, I do things that most people think are a bit daft. But I enjoy that excitement. I enjoy the challenge. The harder it is, the more I like it.
Tell us a little bit about what keeps you sane outside of business then. You've alluded to it then. I know some of the stuff you get up to, but for the benefit of our listeners and viewers, give us something bonkers you've done in the last 12 months.
The last 12 months, I haven't done anything because we're preparing for the one that we do in June next year. But I grew up in North Wales, climbing mountains. Been climbing mountains since I was 10 years old. And so I've been off and climbed many of the big mountains in the world. Some of the famous ones I've climbed. Did that 25 years ago, a bit bored of climbing mountains, so I thought I'd do something else. So I walked to the North Pole, and then my son said, well, he was too young to come with me, and he said, well, why don't we go to the South Pole? So we walked to the South Pole, and then he said, well, I haven't been to the North Pole, so we walked back to the North Pole, maybe together. And we go off and we do these things. A couple of years ago, I rowed a rowing boat from Spain to Antigua and set the new world record, fastest crossing of the Atlantic. We're in the Guinness Book of Records. And then on June the 8th next year, I will set off out of California to row to Hawaii.
Oh, wow.
Which is 1,400 kilometres across the Pacific. And just row my little rowing boat.
On your own?
Oh, no, it's five in the boat. But then 3 years after that, when I reach a certain number of age, 3 years after that, I'll be 70. And I'm going to row the Atlantic on my own then.
That's my birthday present. That's your bucket list.
That's my birthday present to myself.
It's never a birthday present, I've considered.
How important is it to have that balance?
Oh, for me, it's total. I work so hard. I mean, they don't see me here very often. I mean, I'm here, I speak to Darren a lot, I speak to Andrew a lot. But, you know, I'm not here, physically here that often.
Mm.
But I'm in all the businesses. And sometimes I just need to shut down.
Mm.
Yeah.
And, you know, the crossing of the Atlantic was 35 days in a little rowing boat. That's it. There ain't no emails. There's no contact. There's nobody with you. There's nobody going to come and get you. If it goes wrong, it's down to you. And so you are completely absorbed in what you're doing. And, you know, it sounds melodramatic saying you're completely absorbed in staying alive.
Mm.
And so you don't have time to think about investors and salesmen and marketing people and podcasts. You don't have time. Yeah. You're just focused on what you're doing. So for me, it washes my brain clean.
Mm.
And I come back and I've got a couple of years while my brain is working again.
You must have complete trust in the teams around you to be able to have that level of, I say switch off, because it's not, you're not switched off, you're doing something else, your mind is elsewhere. But the fact that you know that X number of businesses are running without your input and you've been at the end of a bump. I mean, I run a small business, a very small business, nothing in comparison to what we're talking about here, but it's difficult to get into the mindset to think, could I switch off for a fortnight fully?
You just have to. I mean, listen, I know I'm going on June the 8th next year. I've known that for 2 years. And I've been speaking to Darren about that for the last 18 months. My input in the business should be, as chairman, it should be at a strategic level. And as long as I can make sure that the building blocks are in place and that we've got the funding's in place and the team are secure, we don't have any crises in the team, then I should be able to take my hands off the steering wheel for a couple of months. I really should.
Yeah, an old boss of mine said when I was kind of really early in my career journeys, you just got to get comfortable with, as you go upwards, you relinquish control.
Yeah.
You can't. It's hard.
I found it really hard. My first role as a CEO was Porsche, right? And I was younger. I was 32. And that was my first job. And I found it really hard to not be involved in every operational decision. And I used to speak it, but I didn't live it. And I said, no, I'll leave it to you. And then I'd come and check.
Yeah.
And when people met in a room that I wasn't involved in, they said, well, they moaned about me and complained about it. Of course they were. They were just doing their job. So it took me probably a year and a half to get used to delegating.
Yeah.
And now, I've been doing it a long time.
Yeah.
You've got to have the right people around.
Do you think this synergy between the stuff you kind of push yourself outside of the work stuff and the drive, the entrepreneurial drive to succeed. I was chatting to a friend of mine earlier in the year. We were all day together. We used to work together. And we were talking about salespeople.
Mm-hmm.
And you often find the salespeople, certainly good salespeople, they also have a vice. So that vice might be they go to the casino and gamble or commission or everything else. But the personality traits that lead them to be really successful and chase that deal lead them to try and chase highs elsewhere as well, whether that's gambling, whether it's drinking, smoking, drugs, whatever. We were talking about that. Now, do you think there's synergy between what you achieve in your personal life and what you've achieved in business?
I mean, the two words that I would use, three words I would use, grit, determination, being stubborn.
Mm.
You know, the journey with ITS has been a tough journey. We've had times where, can we get through this month? And, you know, so I'm looking back in the years now, you know, can we get through? And you've got to just grit on and say, yeah, we will. We'll find a way. And so for me, the expeditions I do aren't one day or 2 days. You know, I expect the Pacific to be 45 days, me in a rowing boat, rowing.
Yeah.
And we row 24 hours a day, you know, 2 hours on, 2 hours off, 24 hours. There's no respite.
Mm.
There is no support vessel. Mm. Nobody's going to come and get you. You turn that boat over, you better turn it back the right way up and get back in, because ain't nobody coming
for you. Mm.
So that grit and that determination, I'm not pretending this is like a strong boy. I'm simply saying you've got to have a mindset that says, okay, it went wrong. Right, how do we get it right?
Yeah.
And so people call me the eternal optimist. They say, you're always optimistic. I say, yeah, because, you know, it's kind of all roads. You know, people say they're lost. No, you're not lost. You're just not on the right road yet. Every road in this country goes to Warrington. You just haven't found the route there yet. So you're not lost. You're just still finding your route. And that's the same in business. When you have a tough time, when it goes wrong, you're not lost. You're just working your way through the next piece. And that's the same with expedition. So I'm optimistic. I always believe we're going to get there. I'm completely determined. And I'm stubborn. People tell me I can't do it. Yeah, noted. ignored is my response to that.
So what piece of tech helps get you through it? What could you not live without? And I'm assuming it's not your out of office.
No. Listen, when I'm
out of office. It's email either from what you said before, 45 days without it.
The most important piece of kit on my in my life, quite honestly, is my AIS system, which is the indicator system on my boat. It's a little electronic system that I can set concentric circles around the boat, and it tells me if any other boat comes into that circle. And I can set this to 20 and 30 miles. Hmm. Which means I can actually go to sleep, and the system's looking. It's not radar, it looks off satellite tracking, but it's by the by. If there's a big boat coming into that 30 miles, it sets up a huge alarm.
Get up and get out of the
way. Wakes us all up to say there's a big boat.
Yeah.
Get away. So that is my most important piece of kit. Navigation. It's the making sure you don't get mown down by a bloody cruise ship.
Destiny of the seas.
That's it.
Wouldn't even see you, would it?
We on the Atlantic crossing, we had one come close to us, and we got on the radio. We saw it, and it set off the alarm. And then we have a VHF radio, and we spoke to the it was a cruise ship. We spoke to it. We could see it coming about 3 or 4 miles away. But you know, they're doing 20 knots at night. They're going really quite quickly. Yeah. And so we spoke to this lovely. She was a lady navigation officer, and we said, "We're just checking. You've seen us." And she said, I won't try and do it. She had a Caribbean accent. She said, yeah, I can see you, but I can't work out what you are. And we said, well, we're a rowing boat. Just pause. And she said, do you realise that you're 450 miles offshore? And we said, yeah, we realise. Where are you going? I said, we're going to Antigua. She said, I'm from Antigua. So we had a lovely chat. She went across our bow and carried on.
I'm going to go slightly off piece. I know we sent you the questions in advance, Kevin, but we're kind of shooting from the hip a little bit with some of these. What businesses outside of the ones that you're working with are impressing you, that you've got your eye on, that you think, I really like what they're doing?
I use Amazon all the time. I live in the middle of nowhere, right? I live in a field. It used to be a farm. I live in a field in the middle of nowhere. And so for me to go shopping is a nuisance. And I don't like shopping anymore. But Amazon has changed my life. And I know they get a lot of stick, and I don't like some of their labor policies. And you know, I read the stuff in the press. But their logistics and their customer service is phenomenal. Now, I think, they start to lose their way because their inventory is starting to be populated by cheap Chinese product, where it used to be branded product. And I don't like that. I don't want, I say Chinese, I don't want product that's poor quality. I want branded products. You know, I don't want copy printer cartridges, my printer. I want Hewlett-Packard printer cartridges. So I think if they go too far that way, they will lose me as a customer and I will find something else. But their logistics, the fact they deliver stuff to me that I order tonight, it's there by lunchtime tomorrow, is phenomenal.
And I think our final question, Kevin, is a question from one of our previous guests. If you were to put together a time capsule of some of today's technology, it can be one, two things. What would you put away for future generations?
Well, I'd put a mobile phone in there because I don't think where I was the other day. I was somewhere in a city and I was sitting down, just coffee, watching the world go past, people watching, and everyone's on their phone. I mean, everyone's on their phone. And somebody walks past you talking. 20 years ago, you thought they were nuts. They're talking to themselves, but they're not. They've got their buds in and they're just talking. So the phone is now part of our life. So I think a phone is a critical part of it. So I would put that in, so future generations.
Does that mean you think there'll be something else that will supersede it so that they wouldn't know what it was already?
I've got a wonderful graphic that I use. I speak at conferences. I've got a fantastic graphic. It's obviously a mock-up, but it's a lady with buttons in the side of her head. Her phone is built into her head, you know, and it's obviously a mock-up. But you just think, how far can this go? How far can it go? I mean, the spectacles that came out the other day.
Yeah, with the Messer glasses.
Yeah. With everything in them. It's like, wow, how far does this go? And the trouble is, I mean, there are pros and cons because we become reliant on it as well.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes, and you know, my detox of me going off on my boat, other people do what they do. A detox away from technology is not a bad thing. So I put a phone in there. Oh, what else would I put in there? I wouldn't say computer because that's just a phone is a computer. For me, you see, I love music. So a lot of my life is around music. A lot of my friends are musicians. I play in a band. I'd put something musical in there. That would be something, some musical form. Spotify is amazing.
Mm. Yeah.
Amazon Music is amazing. The ability. My kids have no concept of not being able to hear the latest album because they just go into Spotify and choose it.
Yeah.
Whereas when I was a kid, you know, somebody at school had the album.
Mm.
We'd all stand around the record player and listen to it because we didn't have access to it. For me, it would be something about music.
Yeah. It's a tough one, though.
But in time capsule, I think I would go with something. I was explaining this. We 1 year, my brother and I both got mini disc players for Christmas, and that was like a fad that came and went. But I used to, if a friend had got a new album, I'd go and kind of copy it on the mini disc, maybe put a mini disc or a cassette in so they can open it and go, "What the heck is that?"
Yeah,
and put a pencil in with it as well.
So it's only Walkman and it's old tech now, but it's just revolutionary, wasn't it? It'll be cassette tapes and something like that to put in it.
I mean, I'm old enough to remember when CDs started.
Mm.
Getting my first car with a CD player in, and I didn't own a CD, so I went to the supermarket and bought 5 CDs to put in my car. And now CDs are kind of finished. People tell me they're coming back again, but they're finished.
I don't think they'll come back like vinyl.
No. So I'd be interested to see what the next big tech shift is. I feel like we stagnated for a bit since the iPhone. I think kind of iPhone, then there was a few years of quite quick innovation. And then there was some gimmicky stuff by some of Apple's competitors to try and say, I'm going to whack this in my device, you need it. And then I feel like we've stagnated.
I thought it was going to be around graphene, because it's a big thing in Manchester, if you've ever followed the Graphene Institute. And that's obviously, it's a material that's conductive, that it's, and you could say your phone, you could fold it up and put it in your pocket. I still think there's something there that's going to be,
something's going to come.
Yeah.
But it feels like we're in a bit of a hiatus in big advances in tech.
I met the guys who run that Graphene Institute.
Okay.
They were competitors in a tech competition where I was a judge. And the capability of graphene is phenomenal. I did not understand. I'd heard of it, and I knew it was thin carbon. But the technology capability is phenomenal.
Mm.
Very exciting. So I think you might be right.
Graphene is good. There we are. There we are.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, that is a fantastic place to wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us.
You're welcome.
Fantastic.
Thank you, Kevin. Thanks for the invitation.
No, anytime.
It was nice to chat.